This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, dropping out from the American dream. Tonight's guest, the Reverend Malcolm Boyd, author of Are You Running With Me, Jesus? Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in the country. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now in New York City, here is Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Instead of dropouts from the American dream, we could well bill our subject tonight as a youth-oriented version of, quote, What's It All About Alfie, unquote. Our guest tonight is Chaplain Malcolm Boyd. He wrote the best-selling Are You Running With Me, Jesus? A few years back, and has a new book, Malcolm Boyd's Book of Days, just recently published. Chaplain Boyd is a radical Episcopalian minister whose primary concern is with youth. He is a resident fellow this year at Yale University's Calhoun College. We want to ask him tonight, what are the reasons and what can be done about them that even in such a bastion of the establishment as Yale University, there are so many dropouts from the American dream? Those who see very little relevance to themselves in what they see as a materialistic treadmill leading to a wife, 2.7 children, a house in the suburbs, 2 cars, and a membership in the country club. Before I repeat our special Night Call numbers, let me once again remind you that he who calls in first has the best chance to get on our air. And if you get a busy, keep calling. Call us collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may call us collect from the West Coast at area code 212-749-3357. For the West Coast again, it's area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Chaplain Boyd, good evening, sir.
How are you, Dale?
Thank you so much for being with us. Chaplain, why are there so many dropouts from the American dream, even at Yale?
American dream. I mean, I think people look at it rather differently, don't you? I think some people I'm not moralizing, I'm just sort of reporting here. I think some people see the American dream as a house and a car, or maybe 2 cars, and some security and annuities, life insurance policies. And then I think some people would therefore see the American dream as a nightmare if these particular things were denied them and they shared the dream that they cannot participate in, but they can die in Vietnam to fight for the dream for those other people. I mean, it's complicated, the definition. And then some people see it not in terms of kind of material things at all, but maybe some sense of the roots of the dream. I mean, it seemed at one point to mean, a new life, freedom of conscience, of expression, an opportunity for someone who in another culture wouldn't have an opportunity. But from the beginning, there were some people who saw it only in terms of a slave ship and an auction market and the breakup of a family.
Well, has the American dream changed through the years?
Well, I don't think there's such a thing as the American dream at all, I'm saying. I think there are American dreams, but people have looked at it quite differently. A white Episcopal bishop who had slaves might have looked at it differently than one of his slaves, don't you think?
Well, let's
So how can we talk about the American dream at this point? It seems to me we're talking about how different people have looked at America and perhaps dreamed.
Well, what is it that we call, that's referred to as the American dream?
I don't know, because again, I might differ from a cab driver in New York who won't take anyone into Harlem. We might differ. I might differ from someone in the White House. I think the American dream traditionally has said something about freedom, freedom of expression, freedom to develop a way of life, pursuit of happiness. It's interesting that from the very beginning, it seemed so elitist, it seemed to be denied. Well, it was obviously denied people on whose backs an economy was fashioned who weren't permitted. I mean, these were people who at the beginning, you know, slaves, the church said didn't have souls at the beginning. They were animals. And then later the church found that it made slaves more docile to baptize them, and that it, so the church then said, well, you know, you have a soul, but this Christianity thing has nothing to do with your body or your mind or this life. It has to do with an other life, an afterlife. So, I mean, it's in terms of this kind of thing, you know, and some American Indians I met on a reservation in South Dakota might have a different definition of the American dream than maybe a girl just out of Oberlin who's in New York as a secretary for a top publisher or advertising agency in a rather glamorous position on Madison Avenue.
Well, is there not some kind of image, some kind of idea that American people have as to what they feel is the ultimate in what this country can give to the average citizen?
I don't know. Do you think that everyone has the same? I rather doubt it.
Well, I can see different goals or perhaps even different expectations, but I mean,
some people have felt, you know, you can there's a two-party system and you can elect the president, but I mean, what if that's irrelevant? You know, the political system has sort of collapsed this year, in a sense. And we see that the two-party system is somewhat irrelevant in terms of this.
Well, we see people, or we hear people, dropping out. Well, what are they dropping out from?
Some people are dropping out, I guess, of massive hypocrisy as they see it. Some people are dropping out of a kind of madness as they see it. Some people are dropping out of a rat race. I mean, maybe you have a very successful man who's an hour or 2 hours a day, bumper to bumper, and he's home in time for Gin on the Rocks and the War in Color for the third year or the fourth year or whatever it is. And kind of working way up in a certain success mythology. And maybe the poor man, you know, says, gee, black people are talking about freedom. Maybe I'd like to be a little free in my $50,000 house. I mean, in other words, I hear all sorts of things along this line, a number of different points of view.
Well, is there, if we are not going to admit to the fact that there is such a thing as an American dream...
Well, I don't think it's a matter of not admitting to such a fact that there isn't such a thing as the American dream. What I'm trying to do is to say that I'm not sure it's capital T, capital A, capital dream, singular. I think there are dreams.
Well, what are the dreams?
Well, I hope the dreams are linked to a human dream. I'm not terribly interested in an American dream or a French dream or a Vietnamese dream. I'm interested in there's a human dream I'm interested in that it seems to me that binds people together, that says that one doesn't have to live in a ghetto in terms of religion or nationalism or race, that there are possibilities for people to make a life together. And a life means, I think, a participation in the political process, a feeling of joy, a feeling of fulfillment as a man or a woman, an opportunity for education, an opportunity for housing, an opportunity for employment, an opportunity to worship and to work out one's intellectual capacities in a way that's unfettered, so that, you know, nobody is either being tyrannical or paternalistic toward oneself. These are some of the components that I would see of the human dream.
Let's welcome some comments, Chaplain Boyd, from some of our Night Call listeners. We'll take our first call from New York. Mr. Counter is hearing Night Call over WRVR. Mr. Counter, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Forget your name. Good evening, Reverend Boyd.
Hi.
Reverend Boyd, several books in the sociology field, in particular Growing Up Absurd by Goodman and The Protestant Establishment by Nijigbe Bolso, have stated parenthetically that there is no real dropouts from the American dream. What it is that they are being forced out by things that are totally against everyone's nature.
Mm-hmm.
That anyone who is part of the American dream got there by being within the right sub-race, i.e. being either a white-angle Saxon Protestant or one of the sub-race stooges, such as the blonde Italian or the German Jewish or something of that nature. And anyone else is looking for a life preserver in deep water. And I'd like to know your comments on this.
I thought I just was commenting on precisely that in my remarks really before. Did you hear them?
Yes, I heard them.
Is there anything new that I might say?
No, what I'm saying, though, is that they, according to the books, and I agree with them, a good number of other books, too, in the field, is that people are being actually denied point-blank parenthetically. They,
Hello?
And I'll tell you from my experience, I have found it to be a case of things that are totally ridiculous. Years ago, the idea used to be if a person wanted to get anywhere, they had to have a secondary school education. Then some bright official got the idea and started pushing it among the legislatures that they ought to make compulsory secondary education. And immediately, every job switched, whether it was business management or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Everything of that nature switched to the college, so you couldn't get decent work without going to college, and that was really ridiculous, because nobody ever had money for college.
Right.
Any people who really needed it.
This is what I was talking about earlier, I guess, wasn't it? The fact that I did not speak of the American dream, if you recall, but I spoke of dreams.
I
spoke rather of the human dream, which was to have an opportunity
well,
to be human and not to be completely dehumanized. I think I was just... someone just read to me tonight the statement by the 14 men who burned draft records in Milwaukee, and it seems to
burned
me that...
Burned draft records or defiled them?
Beg your pardon?
I was under the impression that Milwaukee. I was thinking of Baltimore.
No, a couple of days ago, 14 very prominent people burned draft records in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with the Baltimore, which came earlier. And the statement was read to me tonight... unfortunately, it hasn't been very much in the press, and I hope it will be, because I think people really need to hear it. But it definitely was alluding to the fact that this was a time in which there had to be this kind of courage, and that these people weren't dropping out so much. These people they will be in prison, they feel, and they're, you know, prepared to be in prison if this is what is asked, but they are affirming... It seems to me the human dream. In other words, these are people who feel that we've gotten into a bit of a nightmare situation in terms of the prolongation of the Vietnam War and its various meanings. And I think, you know, as you were speaking, I was thinking of their statement, which I found extremely moving.
Mm-hmm.
So that a number of people at this point have found the American dream to be something, well, of a nightmare.
Well, I don't find it a nightmare. I just find it elusive.
Yes, well, some people have found it a nightmare, whether you have or not. I think the 14 men who have laid their lives on the line, you know, and are going to prison perhaps for this reason, have found it a nightmare. For myself, I have found it, a lot of things, I would say, rather ambiguous. I have found a rather built-in hypocrisy to much of it. And I guess one of my battles has been, if not my war, to see if it couldn't be... more realizable and more realized, because I grew up in a certain way, and it wasn't, I mean, I wasn't taught in school, really, anything except a sort of canned version of American history, for example, and it was really rather later in my life that I got a glimpse of both, you know, the real kind of raw, wonderful possibilities of America, and what had been perverted and subverted by, well, in terms of racism and kind of a chauvinistic nationalism and an economic exploitation of people who are poor. I think the issues now are a bit open.
Which basic issues are
students,
open?
It's odd, but yesterday and today I've been sort of with students continually very early in the morning until very late at night, and I think many of them are quite aware of what's happening, and they want not just to go on in the kind of treadmill way, making a career and having a certain kind of success, but they feel there's a life of the soul, a life of the intellect. They feel there's a life of the conscience. They feel that it isn't fair for them to have a career if their brother is not just being palmed, but perhaps...
Hello? I'm afraid I can't hear you. You just dropped out.
Right. Mr. Counter, we're going to disconnect you temporarily. We're going to go to station identification. We'll get Mr. Boyd back. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Chaplain Malcolm Boyd, who's calling in from Yale University right after station identification.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Malcolm Boyd after station identification.
The most obvious symbols of today's affluent society are the outdoor barbecue and the sports car. The most incongruous is the rat. According to the 1960 census, more than 4 million urban dwellings were completely dilapidated. 3 million more were badly deteriorated. And another 2 million had serious code violations or were overcrowded. If building codes were enforced, most ghetto buildings would be boarded up. During the 1930s, we saved the farms from starvation. Now the cities need help before they die of neglect. If you think there's nothing you can do to help, think harder.
Send for the free booklet, The Turning Point. Write Night Call, Pomona, New York. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect, from anywhere in the country to Malcolm Boyd about dropping out from the American dream. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this time we'll go out to Des Moines, Washington. Mr. Schoelderbrand is hearing Night Call over KUOW-FM in Seattle. Mr. Schoelderbrand, good evening.
Good evening. I would like to point out concerning the American dream that at times it takes on qualities of being the American fantasy. Of course, that's been pointed out before. But in that regard, I feel that it becomes kind of a disease which attacks people who have, to some extent, realized the dream. That disease causes them to overlook or to have a kind of distaste for people who, to them, obviously are not realizing the dream. For instance, when they see a drunk lying on the street, they sort of shudder. Or when they hear of poverty or a very hard sort of circumstances, they really feel a kind of panic. It's an almost inhuman kind of thing. And to the extent that this occurs, I won't go into all kinds of examples of it, but to the extent that this occurs, it seems to me that the American dream, in this case, takes on the qualities of being a nightmare, because although it's a good thing for the people who have realized it to a certain extent, they sort of exclude all the rest of the people. And if there is an American dream that has really an equality for Americans or for people, as you pointed out, it's really a kind of human dream, it seems to me that this should be good not only for, a few people, but for everyone, that it should propagate itself, that it should be a kind of really a more of a kind of basic philosophy than a fantasy. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I appreciate very much what you said. I was thinking of the time in Macomb, Mississippi in 1964 when I was down there in the 16 bombings by white people of poor black people's homes and churches.
Mm-hmm.
And how we were trying to get black people to feel that they could vote, and how they said, well, you know, we can't even go to register. We would be unemployed. We'd be beaten. We'd be harassed. grass. Look at the bombings, they said.
Right.
And I'm thinking of a friend in Detroit. His brother isn't sort of an American success story in many ways, although within himself and as a man, I think he's very successful. But, I mean, he hasn't been able to achieve what he would like to have achieved in many ways. And I once made the comment, I said, it seems to me that your brother lacks motivation. And I remember he said, and I think it's such an insightful thing, he said, no, the trouble is my brother has motivation.
Yes.
And in the so-called American nightmare, wasn't able to do anything about it. And one could go on. I had a note from Detroit, a letter that's very short, and I have it here, but it just said, Malcolm, I'm 24 and black. Mm. Why won't they wake up before it's too late and I'm dead? Just once in my life, I want to be free.
Yeah.
Is that asking too much?
Well,
and here's the American dream, in which obviously these people I have been speaking of, it's an inverse thing. It isn't a dream. It's a reality that's threatening and frightening and
cruel.
Well,
the thing is too, that this dream is referred to so often in our literature, in all of the various media that we have, that it is bound to reach people who really are deprived through one circumstance or another of reaching that dream. And I was listening the other night to a night call program that was concerning dope addiction. And one cause of dope addiction was the feeling, the realization of a person who is sort of immature, that he is a beautiful person, that he has a dream, and at the same time, the absolutely deadening realization that he is not going to be, that this dream that he has, that is part of him, is something that he will never accomplish, and he begins to hate it.
Yes.
And it's almost like the same kind of thing, any sort of perversion.
Yes.
A person loves something and hates it at the same time, and so he has to try to destroy it or has to try to divert his attention from it. And,
or even has to break through the kind of fantasy, as you were alluding to it earlier, to the reality of it.
Right.
Which wanting to break through, I think.
Yeah.
Because I had a summer in 1965 in rural Mississippi and Alabama, and I remember, and I'm also thinking of some Indian students I met in South Dakota, and I met some kind of alienated people here who wanted something very, very much, and I think with a tremendous sense of integrity and outrage going out of the integrity felt that, you know, this was, as you say, a very clear vision of something that won't be possible.
Right. And how can you expect someone who has had all of these disadvantages to begin with to react rather maturely to this thing that becomes so obvious to him that he could have a dream that it isn't his? I mean, how can this person, just by the fact that he feels that it isn't his to have, how could he be expected to react more objectively?
Well, he can't be.
He can't be unless the dream could be shed of a little bit of its frills and folderol and brought down to a much more basic issue of, if there is a dream, it's got to be for everybody, and my dream isn't safe unless the next guy's is too.
I quite agree, and yet I'm thinking of a woman in California, very wealthy, who has a great deal of trouble waking up. The most difficult moment is waking up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes sleeping pills, and she's had quite a bit to drink and one thing or another. But in other words, the awful moment is waking up because there's nothing to do. And this is another victim. In other words, I think seriously that we've been talking about the American dream quite a bit, and there is a certain sense of what we're talking about. And it seems to me that now it's a time for a great deal of honesty, and I think some people want to hold on to a private, privileged, ghettoized experience in which they are maybe living a hell, but nonetheless maybe it's materially good.
I think everyone wants to hold on to his own private ghetto. I was thinking about it the other night because it seems that people really are not able very often, no matter whether they might be really sharp, I mean really have Harlem or whatever kind
of ghetto. Or ghetto in Grosse Pointe or Shaker Heights.
Right, any kind of ghetto. But they are not able to really mentally get out of it. And so every other ghetto becomes something to be feared. To me, the whole scene, I mean, can be viewed in the sense of kind of different classes sort of shifting against each other.
Well,
different
classes, there's a religious ghetto.
Chaplain Boyd.
Chaplain
Boyd.
Yes.
We want to thank our listener. I'm sorry we did not get her name. We had a little confusion here, but we certainly would like our listener to identify herself. We would like to know what station you're calling from.
And I live in New York City.
Oh, you're from New York. All right.
I live on the Lower West Side.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chaplain.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York, dropping out from the, quote, American Dream. And as we're finding out tonight, our guest tonight calling in from Yale, Reverend and Chaplain Malcolm Boyd, says there's no American Dream. So we'll find out this time as we will go to Seattle, Washington, Des Moines, Washington, rather. Mr. Shoulderbrand is listening to Night Call over KUOW-FM. Mr. Shoulderbrand, good evening.
Good evening.
And our apologies, sir.
That's quite all right.
Hello, Mr. Shoulderbrand.
I would like to ask you what would be your comments regarding all the race riot? A couple of weeks ago, I suppose it's been a couple of months ago now, I saw the Three Penny Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And, the state of, the Democratic Convention, and for that matter, the Republican Convention, a war going on about 10 or 12,000 miles away, all this is a little bit like the Three Penny Opera, to my way of thinking. I believe you can understand, there's kind of a parallel there.
Mm-hmm, right.
I would just like to know what do you see as the final consummation of all this?
I think in one sense, one consummation, I don't know how total it would be, you know, but I could see coming out of this, quite definitely now, a police state, a sense of very much of armed repression, and on the other hand, I can see the possibility. I think what I'm so hopeful about, I'm not optimistic, but I'm very hopeful, because I think one is always hopeful when there are alternatives, and the other alternative that I see is an incredibly creative period, because I think at the moment it's creative. Enormously creative. People aren't generally indifferent and bland. As a matter of fact, I wanted to say to the last lady simply one last point that relates to this. It's the fact that I think that a great many people I know, and including many students, are opting out of ghettos, frankly, and they are forcing their ways through walls and ghettos into an understanding, a desire to share in a joy and a fulfillment of life, and this is a very strong urge that I'm finding. So in other words, we have alternatives right now, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't own a boat. I have no interest in a boat. I have no interest in a big fancy home.
Mm-hmm.
I would quite gladly and willingly move to Canada or Alaska or someplace where I could be by myself, where I could live my own life. I might own a square mile of land. I wouldn't be dominated by any of this luxury status symbols. That's the way I'd like to live.
Well, I don't want to live by myself, and I don't want to live my own life, but I've been somewhat affected by Judaism and Christianity in this. It seems to me that each of them calls a person out of his own self and his life into a relationship with his brother, and I think we, at this point, as McLuhan has pointed out, we're all living in a tribal village anyway, wherever we're living, so I really think that if we retreated from a society, whether it was Japanese or American or Brazilian, it seems to me that we would meet that society in Alaska or Canada or Mexico or Sweden anyway.
I suppose so. You're right.
Chaplain Boyd?
Yes.
We must break for station identification.
I'll go along with that.
Mr. Schildebrand, thank you for calling, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
Call with Del Shields and guest Malcolm Boyd after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Malcolm Boyd about dropping out from the American dream. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour. Our guest tonight, Chaplain Malcolm Boyd, the author of the very popular You're Running With Me, Jesus, and his most recent book, Malcolm Boyd's Book of Days. And tonight we are discussing dropping out from the American dream. And I kind of admit to my confusion, because up until tonight I thought that I was one of the thousands of people pursuing some kind of American dream. All right, we'll go out to Kent, Ohio this time, and Mr. Phoenix is hearing Night Call over WERE from Cleveland. Thank you, sir.
How are you, sir?
Oh, very well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be on this big network. Glad to see the radio medium being used, as I am a broadcasting major here at Kent State University. We call it telecommunications now. It's a new name for it. I don't know why they changed it, but they changed the name anyway. And I would just like to ask Chaplain Boyd his definition of the American dream for a starter.
Well, I sort of defined it earlier. Did you hear me at the beginning?
I'm sorry, I wasn't tuned in earlier.
I did answer that, so maybe if I don't go through that again, because it was fairly, I didn't want to be simplistic, which I think is sort of a mistake, and I didn't try to get too generalized, and so in getting specific, I took up maybe, you know, 5 or 6 minutes on that.
Oh, I see.
So perhaps we shouldn't...
All right, I want to ask you to run through that again.
Retread that.
I was wondering how heavily you regard the position of youth in the society as necessary for the improvement of it. I regard it very highly myself.
Yes, I feel that the churches have abdicated moral leadership some time ago, and it seems to me that students pretty much are fulfilling this role. I hate the word role, but in their humanness and spontaneity and anti-role lifestyle are providing a kind of moral responsibility.
I see. Do you generally get the idea that churches in general fail to get in touch with and communicate with the younger people in the society?
Could you repeat that?
Do you get the idea that many of the churches, the current churches, fail to communicate with the young people in the society?
Well, I think that's a tremendous understatement, if I may say so. I sometimes wonder if the churches even think they are communicating. I question now what public worship could mean. It certainly cannot be a kind of dry ritualistic exercise in a building that denies the meaning of community and is usually, you know, denying the kind of meaning of a broader religious base, because often it has racial or economic or ethnic qualifications for membership. It seems such a perversion in so many cases that, you know, youth to be moral would almost have not to participate in it, it seems to me. I really don't know what is going on in the consciousness of many churches, because they seem to really be hurting people sexually and hurting people standing against humanists. So often they seem to be yet other agents of dehumanization. And then to get youth, maybe they don't change the words of a mass or a service, but they get acid rock or jazz,
yeah,
which I think is almost as reprehensible as a church coffee house at this point, if your motives aren't right, if you're doing it as a gimmick.
Yes, just a way to drag people in.
Precisely, you know, and nobody, let's not, you know, what they really mean is drag things in, because you... And people want to be people, not things, I think. At least the people I know want to be people. I want to be people.
Do you foresee the outcropping of new religions, per se, or new treatments of old religions to keep pace with the developing society?
Well, it's like tonight, I'm at Yale this year as a resident fellow, and I was having dinner tonight with three students, two of whom were Jewish. And I know they were speaking of the necessity in Judaism for... what Pope John XXIII, you know, the Vatican Council spoke of as your memento updating. In other words, a desire really to get back to roots. So many people think revolution is avant-garde. It's really ancient. It's very historical. What it means is, let's cut the falderall and let's get past the facade and the public relations ghastliness, and let's get down to some kind of roots. That's what people are saying. And so in Judaism and Christianity, as the two sort of principal religions, I think, in the United States, I find on the part of students a tremendous desire to find out what origins were, to find out answers to the questions of who am I and who are we and what are we doing and who is my brother and what is love. So I don't think there'll be new religions as such.
As a man of the clergy, how did you react to the situation in Chicago during the convention?
Well, I'm not just a man of the clergy. I hope I'm a man and a human being,
very
you
nice.
Know, and I think to see something that would make, you know, that seems something out of Hitlerian Germany,
yes.
It was about as shocking as Selma, wasn't it?
At least.
And
we had the media there. I think that the mass media tended to respond even more so to the situation because members of their corps were attacked.
Well, it was so interesting. Black people and a number of students, black and white, have received this kind of police treatment frequently, but suddenly when a CBS or NBC or somebody important gets it, you know, obviously there's more of an uptight, raw reaction, and it was kind of beautiful because it meant that a great many people who've always known this, Eldridge Cleaver in his book Soul on Ice points out that many a black man in prison, you know, doesn't feel he's broken the law because the law seems to be something against him all the way anyway.
Yeah.
And so here, the establishment, as it were, got its skull cracked open in Chicago. And although I think there are many people in the country who reacted to that as if, okay, let's have lists. You know, let's not have dissent and protest and student smell and maybe they're commies and et cetera.
That's rather
Spiro Agnew, who seems to be coming out with a daily sort of maxim, which, you know, I think George Wallace couldn't begin to do quite as well as Mr. Agnew.
Mr. Phoenix?
I love the sort of old-time Dice Committee, Joe McCarthy kind of...
I already said Joe.
attack on the liberal clergy, even. I mean... We've had dirty Japs, Polacks, liberal clergy. You know, we're running the gamut these days.
Yes.
Mr. Phoenix, thank you so much for calling,
sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night.
This is Night Call in New York, and this time out to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mr. Chatty is hearing Night Call over WAAA-FM. Mr. Chatty, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Mr. Boyd...
Hi, Mr. Chatty.
enjoyed, the humorous approach, but I would be more interested in the pragmatic approach towards, solving these problems of the American dream.
Could you get a little closer to the microphone?
Yes. A more pragmatic approach to solving the American dream.
Right.
And
ask me some specific questions and let me get a little more specific with you.
Yes. I would like to get very specific.
Fine.
I would like to know how, for instance, how the races can live together. And my opinion on this would be not only to foster integration, but to foster intermarriage. You know, I feel certainly that the only way, America can blend together is through intermarriage. And I feel that this is the only way any type of ethnic group that has immigrated into this country has ever been able to blend together. Now, if the federal government certainly wants to, achieve harmony among the races, they would have to start with the individual.
Yeah.
And to start with the individual, perhaps rather than, create housing ghettos, they should make it an incentive for individuals to intermarry. You know, perhaps give them a certain amount of money, for this.
I wouldn't be in favor of that because I'm really sort of critical. I often find with students that there are marriages of convenience, like somebody is Episcopalian and somebody is Jewish, but maybe nobody's been practicing very much religion and the kids happen to fall in love. And suddenly the parents get wildly religious, which means you shouldn't get married. We want you to marry as we would like you to marry or according to some form. And I think to force or to coerce anyone...
No, excuse me a minute.
I always
I'm not
tell
saying
students,
to force, but to make an incentive, to make an incentive.
Well, I'd rather not make an incentive. I don't see a... know one another without somebody staring you down with a hate stare, it would help. And I think if people had more of a chance in school together to grow up as normal human beings, men and women, boys and girls, that this would greatly enhance the possibilities of this.
Yes.
But I always feel that if you're married, you don't just have to love, but it's helpful if you like each other, and just having sex and dancing isn't all of it. Maybe you have to talk occasionally, and consequently, I would like people to really have a feeling for each other, and I think that it wouldn't be in terms of coercing. I've always felt that a rapid increase in racial intermarriage would obviously, in a pragmatic, logical way, be a most important aspect of this. But now you've raised another question, though, that I just want to touch on for a moment. We don't have much time on this program, or any program. This is a great show. It gives you more time than most, but I must mention Black Power here, because there are some students I know and some other people I know who are black who don't want integration at the moment.
Yes,
and I deeply respect them, as a matter of fact, because, and I think this is an important question, because, for example, I think that a tactical separation of black and white in given situations can be the most sophisticated kind of integration that we can have. In other words, if you have a young black child and he looks up and there is a white man there for whatever motive, how maybe paternalistic, maybe not, bleeding heart, do-goodism, or maybe he's cleaned up from that. But anyway, he's standing there. The black child then sees not a black man as the image of dignity and beauty and freedom, but he sees the white missionary again. And I think that, I think Black Power means an awareness of the beauty of blackness rather than having always the norms of white beauty. And it means an understanding of the black man in American history, but not as filtered through these inane and immoral history books, which haven't. So consequently, what I'm trying to say is, it's not as simple as just getting married across lines, but we're going through a period now where the black man, I'm sorry to generalize, but I must, the black man is achieving a sense of identity, thank God, whereas the white man is going through a tremendous identity crisis right now.
Yes,
because he sees only Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, yes, Hubert Humphrey, true, George Wallace, and
true,
Spiro Agnew,
all,
you see.
All the people that work on emotion rather than rational thought. I mean, this is what
well,
the political campaign is based upon, you know.
Yeah.
It's based upon emotion, you know. It's the whole appeal to emotion.
Well, can you recall any that were?
The appeal to the intellect is bound to lose.
Can you recall? I think most political campaigns
Mr. Chatty, I'm very sorry, but we've got a lot of calls backing us up.
Right.
Thank you so much for calling,
thank you,
sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Chaplain Malcolm Boyd, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Malcolm Boyd after station identification. Monday night on Night Call. Just how honest should a politician be? In recent years, the subject of political ethics, specifically the political ethics of a member of the House, Adam Clayton Powell, and a member of the Senate, Thomas Dodd, has commanded considerable attention. Just how honest should we expect our duly elected representatives to be? Should there be a different set of standards for the executive branch than there is for the legislative branch? There is, you know. Former Congressman Brooks Hayes is head of a group called SCOPE, the Southern Conference on Political Ethics. Speak for yourself direct to former Congressman Brooks Hayes about how honest should a politician be. Monday night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself collect from anywhere in the country to Malcolm Boyd about dropping out from the American dream. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Chaplain Malcolm Boyd, and this time we'll go out to Santa Barbara. Mr. Herskowitz is hearing Night Call over KOGO in San Diego. Mr. Herskowitz, good evening.
Good evening. Yes, Reverend Boyd.
Hi, Mr. Herskowitz.
This is your first year at Yale, is it not?
My first week at Yale. It just began about a week and a half ago.
I just started.
I began a column for the Yale Daily News, though, this week that's going to be every week, and I'm trying to interpret my experience a little through the column, you know?
Well, real fine. What I have to ask is, I'm wondering, well, what little experience you've had on the campus, but you've been on other campuses.
Yes.
And in this term, this American dream, in this dropout situation,
mm-hmm.
just what kind of feedback do you get from students and young people in general about this dropout situation? Are they really dropping out? Are there those that plan on doing something, or just what is the situation?
Most students I know are not in any sense dropping out. The whole drug picture has been, well, grotesquely misinterpreted by mass media, I guess somewhat understandably. I mean, you know, it's a good story, and you have to be somewhat simplistic, I guess. I really don't know. But anyway, the pot situation now on most campuses is fairly institutionalized, which means it's no longer a big deal. It's just kind of built in, and there you are.
Right.
But it's also built in with lawyers and other educators and professional people in the same way.
Right.
And nobody's involved in LSD particularly. They're much too busy with other things. It's a serious time. You don't want your children affected, etc.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, booze is almost out of the college scene. When I was in college, everybody was always out kind of lapping it up at football games. But that's reserved now for daddy and mommy, who will moralize about something, but are sitting in front of the color TV looking at the war and getting plowed. The kids don't believe in gin and bourbon and scotch. they're pretty puritanical. As a matter of fact, in regard to sex, I guess one could say promiscuity is in the eye of the beholder. I don't know. But kids, I find, have a pretty, very mature, realistic attitude, as I see it, toward sexuality. Not wanting a lot of hang-ups, not wanting to be dishonest, not wanting a double standard, and God knows they haven't had a great deal of, you know, effective education from us. Mm-hmm. But anyway, most of them aren't anti-Semitic. Most of them aren't anti-black. And I last night, a student from Virginia was in my quarters here, and we were talking, and his parents, you know, extremely prejudiced toward blacks, and he shares none of this. I find this. I was at many southern universities in the last 2 years. The kids don't go along with this. The kids aren't kind of militaristic. They're anti-war. They're for peace.
And they're not dropping, you know?
Uh-huh. You there? Hello? There. Here we are.
Hi.
Operator.
Hello.
Hello?
All right.
Did you lose me?
Well, it's a little broken right now.
Huh?
Chaplain, go ahead.
I got the last statement.
But I mean, did you hear me all the way? Or?
Right.
Well, anyway, what I meant was, I find them very moralistic, and that means they're not dropping out. They're really not.
Well, if they're not dropping out, what do we see that is being positively accented? I mean, we hear a lot of this idealism.
Yeah.
Is it all talk, or is it
very positively. They realize now that in terms of this national election, they have been given no opportunity. So they're becoming very populist in politics. They're working at the level of local elections, and they're trying for the next national election, not with some figure like Senator Kennedy necessarily, or Senator McCarthy, but perhaps someone quite new will come along. But they're not sort of hero worshiping and celebrity worshiping, but they want a so-called leader who at least will somewhat reflect their feelings, rather than some, you know, superstar who doesn't reflect them at all, as we have the men running.
Right.
And
you just tend to agree then that people aren't necessarily dropping out. That it, quite to the contrary, that there is this motivation and that there is this drive and
they're
willing to accept the challenge and go.
Oh, yes. For example, Monday night I'm speaking at Dwight Hall at Yale, and it's the opening session of the agency that coordinates all of the social service activity in the community. Well, the big question with students here now is, many of whom have been working very hard all summer, is that they should no longer work with poor blacks or even poor whites, because they're kind of getting an education at the expense of people that they say they're helping.
Mm-hmm.
That now they have to move into the affluent white culture that suddenly shows a face that is a little shocking, and start communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find a sense of, it's not awfully emotional, but there's a tremendous sense of purpose and meaning and, you know, nobody particularly, a few people want to go to Sweden or someplace, but
right.
The vast majority aren't doing this.
And Mr. Herskowitz?
I don't know, I'm glad you asked this question, because I think a lot of people maybe don't really know what's happening.
This is what I was thinking.
Chaplain and Mr. Herskowitz, I'm sorry. Mr. Herskowitz,
yes.
I'm sorry, we have a number of calls. We want to try to get a couple
right,
more before
right.
we leave.
Thank you
so much, sir. Mm-hmm. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and I think we'll have enough time to take the call from Omaha, Nebraska. Mrs. Beeson is calling in from KBON in Omaha. Mrs. Beeson, good evening.
Good evening.
Hello, Ms. Beeson.
Yes, I would like to ask you, would you not think that we could change the wording now? We have used it up, the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
What about changing it to the American commitment? Let's say semicolon. Then let's put a question. Am I my brother's keeper? I think then if we could ever bring ourselves to realize that we must be concerned, then we could do something. You've said so much along the line, and I've held on. Mm-hmm. I think you really hit that anyhow. So
I know your question, it's beautiful what you said. I think my brother doesn't want a keeper. He wants a brother.
This is true.
And I want a brother, not a keeper.
I don't mean the keeper in the term custodial-wise.
No, you mean brother.
I truly mean brother, but
yes.
Just as the phrase, I think the other phrase is archaic, and we should move along to others. Now, I know you have a lot of others on, and you have touched my brotherhood theme several times. I'm enjoying you immensely, because you have a refreshing, there is a verse in the Bible, I can't recall it now, say, this is a refreshing. I think you have a refreshing viewpoint, and thank God for men like you.
Thank you for calling. Thank you.
I like that so much, what she said, Mrs. Beeson, don't you? Because, I mean, the American commitment, indeed, you know, interiorly, for integrity and honesty, rather than decadence and corruption and self-seeking and egotism and exploitation and manipulation. And then the American commitment then, because who is my brother? My brother is legion and specific. And so then America has a commitment not of self-interest, but of brotherhood. I mean, it's the only reason to live. I think some people don't... Well, I mean, to me, self-interest is totally meaningless.
Chaplain, you know? We've come to that point in our show when it's always the saddest part of the show because we're unable to accept any more calls.
Yes.
We'll be coming right back to you for a closing comment. But right now, here's a word about next week.
Next week on Night Call, Monday, former Congressman Brooks Hayes on just how honest should a politician be. Tuesday, folk singer Joan Baez on what she says the nonviolent protest should be. Wednesday, Cornell University chaplain Father Daniel Berrigan. He says the draft is a bloody mess. Thursday, sex expert Dr. Mary Calderon on sex and society. And Friday, Esquire magazine political commentator Dwight McDonald. He says we need an entirely new American constitution. Political ethics, nonviolent protests, the draft, sex and society, and a new American constitution. All this next week on Night Call. Again, Del Shields.
Right. And we have just about 1 minute, and I hope that our chaplain Boyd, who's our guest tonight, can tell us that since we don't have an American dream, but he does believe in the human dream, what can we do about pursuing this? Chaplain, you have right now just about 30 seconds.
Well, Del, I think there is a commitment. There's an American commitment, but I think the human dream is an awareness that, you know, you can die alone, you can die together, and we all will die. And it's the resurrection that follows any death, which is the exciting thing, really. And, of course, in life we have many deaths and many resurrections. But we're living now. So let's live for each other, and then one can live alone with some kind of beauty and meaning. But if we're going to live alone the selfish, grubby, self-seeking lives, well, then we're in hell now. You don't need to worry about a place 3 miles below with a Fahrenheit. So I'm all for the dream of making life together rather than making death together.
Are you optimistic?
I'm not optimistic at all, and I'm not pessimistic. I'm hopeful, and I hope, and I try to be realistic.
Chaplain, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you, Del.
Tonight, our guest has been Chaplain Malcolm Boyd. This is Del Shields in New York. Thank you, and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station, How Honest Should a Politician Be? With former Congressman Brooks Hayes. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.